time on Creator Corner, we're going to talk about mechanics, this time point of view. But before we dive into that, I wanted to talk briefly about something that's going to be relevant every time we talk about grammar or punctuation or rhetorical devices, and that's the idea of prescriptivism versus descriptivism. So I was raised by an editor, indexer, who thought that grammar was wonderful and raised me to feel the same way. And I love grammar, and that's going to come up a lot on the pod, I'm sure. You're going to hear me wax poetic about apostrophes and stuff like that. But that kind of grammar structure we call prescriptivist. It's a prescription. It's telling you how you're supposed to do something. It's an instruction. And the purpose of that is to make a piece as accessible as possible. If we have standard grammar rules that we all agree on, then when we read something, we can process it exactly the way the author intended it to be processed, or at least make our best attempt at getting there. But I also have a degree in linguistics, and linguistics is descriptivist. It doesn't tell you how something should be done. Linguistics isn't about right grammar or what the correct accent is or anything like that. It just looks at the world, it looks at the language we have, and it describes the way that we're using it. So words dying off and disappearing, linguistics doesn't care. It's just going to record that. New words coming into existence, I have had people say, like, as a linguist, doesn't it bother you that the kids are using yeet these days? And it's like, no, that's wonderful. That's how language survives and evolves and changes and becomes this amazing thing that we can dedicate an entire field of study to. But when we talk about grammar on the pod, we're going to get prescriptivist. And I always feel like there's sort of two sides to me, the prescriptivist and the descriptivist. And both are super important and play a big role in what I create and how I create it. So when we dive into this, you're going to hear a lot of right and wrong, and you're going to see examples that we'll post as well that will have right and wrong. And we want to make sure that everybody understands that when we're being prescriptivist like this, the goal is to give you the tools that you can use to really understand how your work is being processed by the people that are reading it, what they're understanding, what your commas are saying, what your apostrophes are saying, so that you can look at those and make judgment calls as an artist about when you want to use those rules accurately and when you want to say fuck it and ignore them completely, because that is valid too. But I think the more you know, the better educated you are on these topics, with the more confidence and the more power you have to use those tools to make your work say exactly what you want it to say to as many people as possible. So that's going to be our goal with these grammar or mechanic-based Creator Corner pieces. And today we are going to start with point of view.
There are so many elements in plotting a fic in particular, and which is when we're kind of talking about structure like this, it's a little bit more of the rhetorical things that Ferret mentioned earlier. I think a lot of times they come so naturally that we don't think consciously about them. And one of those is the point of view of the characters that we give. So I always write in third person past tense, for instance, because it feels the most natural to me. And I read a ton of books in first person, but for some reason that I can't quite articulate, I don't like reading fics in first person. And it could be because we're all sharing these characters and I don't want to be in your version of their head. I'm not sure. But I would never write in first person.
The differences between first, second, and third person is only the tip of the iceberg and things to consider when thinking about point of view. So in an effort to help us all be a little more intentional with our writing, we're going to address some of those things today. But first of all, you threw out a lot of terms already, so let's review the basics. What do we mean when we say third person, first person? So first of all, first person. First person is when a story is written with I. So I went to the store, I petted the dog. That would be first person. The narrator is the person whose head you're in, the I person, whoever that may be. It's not intended to be the reader, but it puts the reader really, really, really close inside the character's head. So it's a very, very tight place to be with that character. Second person is probably almost certainly the least used. Not just in fic writing, but in all creative writing. It can be used to great effect, but it's pretty rare. Second person is when you use you. So you went to the store, you pet the dog. It's a very unique approach to creative writing that certainly has a flavor to it that I will say a lot of people do find unpleasant to read, or at least challenging to read. Again, it's hard to articulate exactly why it makes people uncomfortable. I think there's a sort of, because it's also the structure we use for imperative tense. So when we're telling somebody what to do, there's sort of a challenge to it, perhaps, like you do this, that just gets our back up a little bit. I'm not sure, that's just my own personal musings, but that is second person. Third person is definitely the most common point of view for fic, and probably also for other forms of creative fiction as well. Third person is when you say he or Steve or Tony. So Steve walked to the store, Tony pet the dog, he likes that car. That is third person. And the fourth point of view that you can write is omniscient, often shortened to omni. Omniscient as a word means all-knowing, and that's the case with this POV. And here's where you find out that I kind of lied to you.
Ferret!
Okay, look, it's easiest to identify POV based on the grammatical structure of I versus you versus he, but in truth, that's not actually what POV really means when we're talking about constructing a story. It's so much more than that. POV, more broadly, is the answer to the question, where is the narrative lens? And omni is what makes us realize that we have to dive deeper than just using the grammatical clues. I'm going to use video games as an example for a bit, and I know that won't work for everyone, but it's a little easier than movies, though we can also talk all day about which POV various movies are in. We're going to start with first person. There are a lot of first person video games. These are games where the camera is inside the main character's head, looking out of their eyes. So games like Halo, Overwatch, and Half-Life. You can generally look down and see your own hands or your body or feet, but you can't see your own face because the camera is your face. These games are booming in VR right now because with added body movement, you can feel like you really are the character. Third person is also very popular in video games. These would be games like Uncharted, Tomb Raider, or Assassin's Creed. The camera only follows one character. You can't pull the camera away and watch another character or watch two characters at once, but you can see the whole of that main playable character as if the camera is hovering over them or even following them like a GoPro on a selfie stick stuck to their head. Second person would be very challenging to do in a game. I thought about it a lot, but second person in some ways is an outlier in that it's a narrative style and a grammatical structure, but it somewhat struggles to answer the question of where the camera is. It's also not very common. So I'm going to leave this here, but I can think of some games, like maybe some dating sims or perhaps Oregon Trail at times, that use a second person narrative to involve you in the story. I don't think we can really dive deeply into that concept right now. If you want to think about second person in terms of a camera, think about a webcam, that image of you when you're having a video talk with someone, and in the corner there's that little video of you. That's kind of the closest I can get to with that. Omniscient is like playing The Sims. You can move the camera around anywhere within the confines of the world you're playing in. You can see all the characters, interact with any of them, and if one character leaves a room, the camera can stay in the room with the remaining character, or it can leave with the first character. This leads me into a sidebar on close versus distant. Any of the four POV options can be either close or distant. This is not a grammatical choice at all. It's a narrative and rhetorical choice. Close puts the camera so deep inside the character's head that you feel what they're feeling. An example in video games would be games that add grayed out screens or flashes of red and the sound of a pounding heart when you're injured. In fiction, close would be something like, Tony felt heat rush through his veins, every hair standing on end. Or, I held the wand in my hand and could feel it thrumming with power, my stomach twisting with nerves. The narrative tells the reader not just what the POV character is doing, but also what they're thinking and feeling, both emotionally and physically. Distant, which is also sometimes called limited, pulls the camera back. It describes what is visible from the place where the camera is positioned, but it doesn't add anything internal that the character is thinking or feeling. This would be something like, Steve made his way to the kitchen, his footsteps loud as they echoed through the empty room. Or, I followed the long winding path for over an hour before I finally came to a bright red door standing between two tree stumps. It's important to note that while I'm giving single sentence examples, POV is a choice you make for the whole part of the story, be it a chapter or a scene or the entire story. So a distant third person would be that distant for the entire story, or at least that entire section of a particular POV. So how does close and distant relate to omni? You can have both in omni too. I would say think about the difference between playing The Sims and playing, say, SimCity. In Close, you can dive into each character's head, know what they're thinking and feeling. The way you can click on a Sims character and it will tell you which needs they need filled most. You follow them as closely as Close Third. You get pounding hearts and love and joy and terror and hair standing on end. What makes it Omni isn't how close or distant it is. It's the freedom for that camera at any point to leave that character and follow or dive into another. With distant Omni, we can see everything all the characters are doing, everything they can see and interact with, and the camera can follow anyone anywhere, but their heads and bodies are sealed shut, so we still get that distance. Closeness is a scale. It's a spectrum, not a binary. And it's normal to gently zoom in and out with a subset of that scale. It can be jarring to do sharp cuts or to have a lot of close and then jump distant or vice versa. So I caution you to be intentional, not just with which POV you choose, but with your closeness or depth as well.
So we're talking about POV character a lot, but also narrative voice. Are those different things? Is the character a narrator or do you need another narrator? Can you unpack a little bit more what narrative voice is versus POV character?
All right, so that kind of brings us back out of video games and puts us back squarely into writing. So what is narrative voice? Well, it's the voice of the prose of your piece as opposed to the voices in the dialogue. In practice, that means what are the rhythms of speech that the prose has? What references does it make? Metaphors, how flowery or simple is it? Narrative voice is inextricably tied to your POV because your primary POV choice and your depth of POV will govern how your narrative voice should be structured as well. A very close narrative voice uses turns of phrase, references, and pacing that the character would use. If we're close in Steve's head, in First, Third, or Omni, the prose won't make a simile that compares someone to, say, Cher, most likely. What are the odds Steve knows who Cher is, or at least knows her cultural presence well enough to be able to compare somebody to her? He'd be more likely to use a comparison with, say, Clark Gable. In close POV, using the character's voice as the narrative voice, i.e. the voice of the prose of that part of the story, can help make it feel even closer and more true to the character. But when we pull back and look at distant POVs, we have a choice. A distant POV can still be told in the character's voice, but sometimes that can be at odds with the lack of internal detail. If it sounds like the story is Tony telling you something that happened or is currently happening to him, why wouldn't he know how he felt, what he was thinking, how his body felt? So oftentimes with distant, you'll have a separate narrative voice. This can just be the voice of the author. It often is. It's most people's sort of default. They write the way that they talk. But it can also be a narrator who's given a specific tone and a style and a rhythm all their own. A really popular example of a really strong narrator voice would be Lemony Snicket in A Series of Unfortunate Events. There's a very strong narrative voice, but it's not one of the characters the camera follows. He's a separate character, and he has his own way of talking, and it comes through in the prose instead of in any dialogue. In movies, plays, and TV shows, you also sometimes get a narrator who's a character, like Lemony Snicket, who comes in and tells you things that are happening in the story. The narrator is often omniscient, and in the case of the new Good Omens TV show, this is taken very literally, as the narrator is God herself. And sometimes this is used to comedic effect, like that meme where the speaker is contradicted immediately by the narrator, like, Ferret, I am going to bed early tonight. Narrator, she did not, in fact, go to bed early that night.
Yeah, and that comes from Arrested Development, because...
Oh, so does it.
Yeah, Ron Howard narrates the show and very clearly thinks the Bluth family is as ridiculous as we think they are.
Okay.
So it like that kind of like, she did not in fact do that, is it really became popular meme-wise from Arrested Development.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so that's a really strong narrative voice. So people, you could see how if you translated that to writing and had a narrator say contradicting things that the character said, that makes the narrator their separate character. It also gives the narrative voice a very strong presence in the story.
So what about when POVs and narratives change within a story? Like, you say to pick one and stick with it, but I know personally, like as you were talking, I was like, I don't do that. I don't pick one and stick with it. That doesn't happen. My favorite structure is alternating POV. And I don't quite know where this would fit in what you're talking about, to be honest. So maybe we could talk this out a little and help the listeners in a way. So like, for instance, I was just writing a chapter of my big While You Were Sleeping work right now, which is in the scene, I needed both Steve and Bucky and Tony to tell me what they were thinking, to tell the audience what they were each thinking about the same set of circumstances. So I would like launch a narrative, something, you know, launch the narrative in Tony's point of view. And then I would put like a, I have like a line break, and then I have Bucky's, and then I have another line break. So I'm really clear to break up the scene so that you aren't like jarred, but hopefully, maybe you will be, people can complain. But it was important to me that we know how all three of those men are thinking about this one event.
Yeah. So that would, that's like, we've already established, we've got the grammatical structure of point of view. We've got the rhetorical structure of point of view. We've got narrative voice. And now we're also adding another one, which I would say we could call story structure. So within the structure of the story, you can break the story down into chapters or scenes or even little snippets. And as long as you have clear dividing lines, we would call that alternating POV, to jump between two characters or multiple characters at these points where we have dividing lines. So that's like yet another layer when it comes to structuring a story, and another thing that we consider. Do I tell the whole thing in one POV? Do I alternate? And if you're thinking about alternating, you have a choice between using omniscient as your POV or choosing a different one, say third close, which is most common for fan fiction, and alternating, so you get that added layer of what other people are thinking.
So in almost all of my long fics, I alternate POVs, and I do it either by sections or by chapters. But it's like, I don't think I can go over 2K being in one person's head at a time, because my question is always, what is the other character feeling?
Oh yeah.
And I can't, if I'm writing a Steve, I can't talk about what Tony's feeling.
It's an interesting question, because it also, when you're talking about like the interplay of the actual narrative, the story, and the voice there, switching POV really changes things, because if you write an entire story from one perspective, you do only get that character's perspective. Sometimes I can add things like tension, because we don't know what the other character's thinking, and we don't know if they feel the same way or how they've interpreted an argument or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas with alternating POV, it can add a different kind of tension, maybe because we both know they are feeling the same way, and if they would just talk, that kind of thing.
Use your words, gentlemen. Yes, I know. Yeah.
The day they start using their words is the day I don't have anything to write about anymore. So.
Oh, but that's the good news is canon is closed and they never did, so we can just keep going.
That's true. This is really one of those things I was mentioning before about how understanding the structures and the building blocks lets you play with things, because you can choose one and stick with it for the whole story, but knowing how they can interact and how you can use them and how different they are means that you can stick them together in different ways to potentially make a story more interesting. Have you ever like done a story mostly in third, say, but with periods of first or omni or something like that?
Huh.
Do you play with POV beyond alternating?
Well, I do when we're talking epistolary, because I play with text messages all the time.
Oh yeah. And that's like, epistolary is a whole other amazing kettle of fish, because
yeah, and
does
we'll get
epistolary
into that
even have a POV? Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. And so I structure everything in WhatsApp chats.
Okay.
So that I can make sure that there actually it is a neutral POV, because iMessage isn't as much.
Right.
So like that sounds crazy to people perhaps, but it makes sense in my head.
Yeah, well, whatever.
So, but I have read stories, and I'll be honest, these are harder for me to track with emotionally, where people jump around without structure, giving me clues to tell me that we're jumping in different people's heads. So like the story will be in third person close with Steve's point of view. And then all of a sudden I will know what Tony is thinking, and I don't know what to do with that. So I just find it really jarring.
Oh yeah. Unless you're doing omniscient on purpose, if you randomly switch back and forth, that's called head hopping. I think a lot of people confuse head hopping with omniscient. So maybe we should talk about the difference between omniscient narration and head hopping.
Yeah. Give people a breakdown of that. Like, do we have any, can you think of examples off the top of your head of like what would be different?
Yeah. So fundamentally, the POV should be predictable. It's part of what lets us sink into the story, and any unexpected changes will jolt us out of that. So if you're doing alternating, like we talked about, as Flame said, you're going to want to switch POVs at chapters or sections or however you divide up the story. There needs to be a cue to the reader that the point of view is about to switch. If you're in one person's head for, say, three chapters, and then halfway through the fourth chapter, you suddenly jump into someone else's head, it's not just going to be confusing. It's also going to be, it's going to push the reader out of the story because they're going to have to stop and ask some meta questions like, wait, how did they know that? Whose head am I in? What's happening? And you never want to push a reader into meta unless you're doing that on purpose. This differs from Omni in that in Omni, you're making the conscious choice to constantly and fluidly move the camera around and dip in and out of people. Honestly, I find balance the hardest thing in Omni. I've only written it a little bit and it was a huge challenge. If you spend too much time dipped into one person, it can feel unsettling when you move to another because it almost got a third close quality. But if you jump too quickly, it can be stuttery. So my hat off to people who managed to nail that aspect of Omni. So there's actually a couple of different kinds of head hopping that happen. But basically the idea is if we're inside one character's head, and that can be first, second, or third, or, you know, we're not going to talk about omniscient for the moment. If you're in first, second, or third, but you're still in one character's head, so I'm telling the story from, say, Steve's perspective, an obvious head hop would be is if within the prose, I tell the reader what Tony is thinking or feeling. Because from Steve's perspective, he won't know that. He could guess that. He could assume it. Tony could seem to be thinking of something. And these are all words you should use liberally when you want to do that kind of thing. But I can't just say, Steve shook his head and Tony was confused. If I'm in Steve's perspective, that's not going to work. How do we know Tony's confused? Steve doesn't know Tony's confused. He can guess he's confused, but he can't know for sure. So that's a kind of an obvious head hop that people should be aware of. If you tell the reader straight up what someone else is thinking or feeling and you're not in their head, that's going to be a head hop.
And that will pull me out of a story so fast that...
Yeah, I have a low tolerance for head hopping. I just find it so confusing that I really can't sink into the story.
Yeah, I don't know what you're... because to me, some of it too is I want to know that you know what your characters are doing. And if you're hopping sometimes, if people hop from character to character, I'm not always sure they know either character.
Yeah, I can sometimes feel like you're avoiding saying what the initial character was thinking by briefly being in someone else's head.
Yeah, and like I don't ever think head hopping is intentional. Like I really don't. It's just it's actually to me a sign of unintentional writing. If that makes
sense. I would agree. I can completely understand the urge because you realize you want the reader to know that Tony is uncomfortable or Tony is jealous or something like that.
And I write it in my rough drafts. Let me tell you, I'll do it and then I have to go back and be like, no, we say appears to.
By all means, and write that down, have that as a note. You should know what your other character is thinking. And that's something maybe we could talk about at a later date. But when it comes down to the final draft, you always have to be asking yourself, what does my POV character know? And if the other character doesn't know it, but you still want to make sure the reader does, there are so many ways that you can show the reader. If you want to show that Tony's being jealous, have him be snippish and a little rude, maybe condescending to the person that he's being jealous of, that kind of thing. There's always stuff that you can pour in there so that the reader can figure out what the other character is reading, feeling. But if you jump in there and tell them, that's going to be a head hop. And then there's also a less obvious, but maybe no less common version of head hopping, which is when it's not so much jumping into another character's head to process what they're thinking or feeling, but it is, in a sense, taking the camera out of the head of the person we're supposed to be in. So I would call it a sort of a visual head hop. When you describe something in the prose that the POV character shouldn't be able to see or shouldn't be able to feel happening. So say a pretty common one, especially in Smutty Fix, would be if the POV character is Steve, to have Steve say Steve's, from Steve's perspective in third person, to say Steve's pupils dilated. you can't feel your own pupils dilating. You don't know when your own pupils are dilating. So if we're in Steve's POV, he would have no way of knowing if his pupils were dilating or not. It's only something you can see in someone else. So he'd be able to see whether Tony's pupils were dilating, but only Tony knows if Steve's pupils are dilating, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think this happens, the head hopping happens the most often during sex, I think, legitimately.
Yeah, it's when I see it the most. And I also see during sex scenes, it's fairly common for a sudden POV change to occur and then for it to go back at some point. And yeah. I'm not entirely sure why that's so common. I think there's something about sex scenes that are, they switch from having an external nature to being very internal, and they're challenging to write, the movement's challenging to describe, and people fall in that, and then they sort of fall back on trying to have both characters have feelings and thoughts just to give them some meat to work with, perhaps. There's also a lot of parts of sexual arousal that are not visibly obvious but aren't necessarily sexy for somebody to talk about, so you do have to be careful about when you're describing something that your POV character can see or think or feel versus the things that they cannot see or think or feel.
And that's a really good guiding question for however you're structuring your prose and your dialogue. Ask yourself, where is the camera? And who is the narrator in this scene? And what does the narrator know or see? If you are talking about watching Steve watching Tony put on the suit or the suit building around him, it's a really good thought exercise to even just say, what does Steve know right now about the suit? What does Steve know about how he feels about the suit? What does Steve know? Ask yourself those kind of questions, and it'll be easier to stay in one person's point of view.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think those are all great questions. I think before we even start writing, it's a great idea to sit down and look at your outline and say, is this a single perspective? Do I want to write this in first, second, third, omni? What appeals to me? And then do I want to do alternating perspectives, just one character? If I do one character, are there any plot points here that are going to be hard to show the reader because they happen off screen for that character? And just make some of those decisions in advance, or at least have it on your mind when you start writing so that you can be proactive and work towards the structure that you want it to have.
And if you're somebody who doesn't use outlines because that doesn't work for you, this kind of thing would be a good idea to even just have on scratch paper as you are working out. I know a lot of people, and I'm one of them, you just kind of write off the top of your head and you kind of go. But it will, I can almost guarantee you, save you more editing in the meantime and save anybody else more editing later to have an idea of those basics before you kind of get too far into it.
Yeah, and like I said, I hope we'll talk about this again, but it is a great creative writing exercise to know everything that your other characters are thinking, even if their POV is never going to make an on-screen appearance for your piece, because that will give you intention when describing their body language and their tone of voice and how they're interacting with your POV character. So by all means, think about that. We're certainly not saying, you know, don't go in Tony's head at all. Go spend some time in the other character's head and make those notes and either keep them as comments on your doc or in a separate doc or on scratch paper, and let that drive your intention. But then when you're actually coming down to writing and editing, ask yourself those questions about what can my POV character see, experience, feel.
It is also not for nothing, participants in bangs, a really good way to add word count, asking yourself those questions.
Oh yeah, if you struggle with descriptions, those are great ways to flesh out your descriptions. Ask yourself those questions, and it will only help you sink further into the head you're supposed to be in. And if you think you have trouble with this, if this is something like, if you've listened to this and you're like, oh God, I feel like I've done this before, or I'm not sure if I'm doing it, then it's a great idea to, when you get a beta reader, which I highly advocate, and we'll talk about that later too. But if you do have someone that's beta reading for you, say to them, hey, sometimes I think I head hop, keep an eye out for it. I don't know if I can't always tell when it happens. So I'd love if you could make those comments. And most beta readers would love to have that kind of guidance of what to look out for.
We did ask the community one specific question, and that was which POV they prefer to most often write in. And we did this via Twitter poll so that people could only choose one. And overwhelmingly and not surprisingly to either Ferret or myself, people chose 81% of the vote
for third person.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I wasn't able to find any actual statistics on this because most people don't tag their point of view. So it's pretty hard to determine what percent of AO3 or what percent of Stony Fix on AO3 or Marvel Fix on AO3 are in which point of view. But just anecdotally, I think we can all say pretty confidently that that percent probably lines up with how many fix are available, at least in our fandoms, in third person as well.
Yeah, and I think like second person came in with 5% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most second person fix in fanfic then would be character and reader. I would assume that would be the majority.
I would think so, yeah. Reader inserts.
Reader inserts, thank you. That's a much more elegant way to say what I just said. And then we had some conversation both on Twitter and then in the Discord where we were talking about this. Omni came in second place with 12% of the vote. But as people explained what they meant by Omni, it sounded a little bit more to me like third person with multiple characters.
Like an alternating third person.
Like an alternating POV. And I think because Twitter is limited and we don't really know how to describe or talk about Omni well, as we covered a couple minutes ago, it's a really kind of amorphous, complicated thing to wrap your brain around. I don't know how often those people actually write an Omni or if they're writing in third person or if I'm misunderstanding. I don't know. It's all those options are possible.
Yeah, it's hard to say because Omni really, there's a line between Omni and rapidly oscillating, alternating point of view. And, you know, some people might define it differently. So, yeah, it's interesting that it got a, you know, fairly significant portion of the vote. Maybe we can talk about Omni later in more detail and get into how people view it and how they approach writing it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear if after you hear our conversation about Omni, if you disagree with how we define it and why, and kind of walk us through how you see it. I'd love to get some different thoughts on that.
So how did first person do?
Oh, we got a whopping 2% of the vote. But that doesn't surprise me because when we talk about this, like when I've just dropped in on this conversation colloquially and other places on Discord or Twitter or Tumblr,
mm-hmm.
first person gets a bit of a bad rap because people don't like it for fanfic. Now, we tend to like it for other published works. Like there's
I couldn't find any statistics on this because nobody's really done an analysis of it. But again, we can say pretty confidently, anecdotally, that the percent of first person in original fiction, original published fiction, is vastly greater than in fan fiction.
So I think some of that goes to how we interact with the characters in fan fiction.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, because, I mean, first of all, we're introduced to them in third person. We interact with them in third person or Omni in a lot of ways. But also how we all create and craft our characters, if we're writers, or the fix that we choose to read if we're readers, and a lot of us are both, is almost like a very deeply personal thing, I think. So I jump in my version of Tony's head all the time to write the fic that I write. If I walked into his point of view, first person point of view from somebody else's perspective, I think I would feel a little bit lost.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to put it. I definitely think that the fact that the canon is all sort of inevitably third person is a factor. And then the question of how you interact with the characters is an interesting one, because first person definitely has a different feeling to it, a more internal, a more personal feeling that can make a character feel more real sometimes. But with fanfic, you already have the character and you're trying to, instead of being sort of creative with the character, you're trying to be representative with the character. And that first person can feel sort of in competition with that representing what already exists.
That's an interesting way, the idea between representation and creativity. I think that might be one of the kind of basis of this discomfort with first person for some people.
Yeah. And it's not always easy to define. I mean, obviously there's still a lot of creativity that goes into working with these characters because, you know, you have to take them new places and you have to ask yourself where they'd go when they're in these new places. But in terms of designing the characters for fanfic, our our goal, for at least a lot of people's goal, is to fit them in these cookie cutters they're already in.
Yeah, or at least adjacent to the cookie cutters enough that they look recognizable. I think, like, when I describe to people why I read fanfic and not other fiction, like what the difference is for me, a lot of it's about the investment in character building. I don't have to spend 20, 30 pages getting to know these people. I already know them. So all I need you to do in your fanfiction is, through tags or a couple lines, tell me who they are in this universe you've built, and then I'm good.
Yeah.
And I have the map. I know I have the map already. I don't need to figure out how the character is going to react to this. If you're setting up a fic in which someone's going to have a misunderstanding, I pretty much already know how Tony's going to react, and I just want to read how you're going to write it.
Yeah. Yeah, that also speaks to the two cakes thing, because, like,
yeah,
in a lot of ways, fanfic is already just more cake of the same characters that we want to read about. So, you know, we're sort of already just hitting that button of, I just want to see them more. I just want to spend more time with them. And I guess, you know, first person maybe doesn't feel quite the same. But I want to hear from people. You know, there were 2% of people said first person. So I'd love to hear more about why they like first person, why it works for them. If they write shipfic, or if it's like a self-insert or with an OC or something like that, if that speaks more to first person. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I didn't even consider that would make a lot more sense if it with an OC or a self-insert.
Yeah. I do think, yeah, I have seen some of that.
Yes. So as always, talk to us.
Yeah. Hopefully this gave you guys some food for thought, this whole conversation and the poll and just getting it out there. But it feels like there's still a lot to explore with the concept of POV, how you use it, the difference between point of view and a narrative voice, how we break Omni down to make more sense. So hopefully we'll keep the conversation going over on Discord and on our other social media. If you've got anything to say about this, or you're one of the people that voted for one of the less voted options, you want to tell us why, we would love to know. So hopefully we'll see you there.